heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation. And now, Malcolm.
You know, when somebody says to you, remember the old days, you have to think about, well, how old are those days? How far back are we going, really? Do you want me to remember? Is that in my lifetime or outside of my lifetime? Because the old days can mean a lot of things, right? I mean, remember the old days, yeah? What are the old days? But, you know, someone said to me the other day, God, it's like we're living history or something. Like, I mean, living history. Well, living does make history, obviously, as we move forward, right? But it does feel a little bit of a wonderland moment as you step outside of this thing and look back in. I don't think many people could have predicted this, I have to tell you. Things are changing. Let's just call it, it's a complete new reset that's happening here. Now, some people are not going to like this reset. Others want to bring back the old America. A couple of different ways to look at this, people. You just have to realize up front, life, if you're moving forward and you're growing, then you innovate. You have to change. Nothing can stay the same, really. I mean, think about it in those terms. I mean, what's ever going to stay the same? I hear a lot of people running around lately, and I get caught in the same trap. Let me just confess with you now. And we run around and we think, oh my God, it's all changing. It's all different. I don't like this new normal, whatever the new normal is. Now, these are unprecedented times, no doubt about it. I mean, this is a double, triple, quadruple whammy here all at once. This is like where you got to put your big boy pants on and get over it real quick, right? Or try to at least. But, you know, you keep hearing those words, the new normal. Now, listen, I'm all about innovation. I'm all about moving forward. In fact, I think many of you probably know out there, I don't like complacency. I mean, you probably know that about me. I like to change the furniture around. I love to make it new again. I love to move forward into a whole new thinking pattern and raise the stakes, and I love that. I told you that story before. I used to move the furniture around in the agency just so they'd come back in Monday morning and not know where they were. Well, that was just to get a rise out of people, to keep them unsettled, off balance, if you will, because I think we're at our best when we are a little off balance. I know some of you are saying, get over it, Malcolm. I mean, come on, how off balance do you want us to be? We definitely are fighting this one, people. I mean, there's no question about it, right? Right in daylight here, we are taking on some of the tasks that we never thought we would take on probably in our lifetimes. I mean, because it is all at once. One author says it this way. Remember those everyday interactions with the old world, the grumbling about the obstacle course of the commute. So this is like, remember when the roads were busy and the highways and you had traffic everywhere and, you know, the nonverbal mingling of sights, sounds, and smells of the workday, right? The simple times, the ritual of lunch, the social theater of non-task, one-on-one and group interaction. Everybody had a normalcy to their life, whatever it was. It was some sort of a normal. Your normal is your normal. My normal is my normal, right? Although I do tend to take a drive sometimes off the beaten path. I like to get away from normal a lot. And you know, I am a bit of an oddball, a screwball, you might say. So that's not unusual for a guy like me, because I don't always like that same path. You know, Robert Frost said that real well with the two paths in the road, right? You have to decide and take one real quick, fast, make a decision. Hurry up, jump. Which you going to take? Well, the problem here is all of a sudden, we had multiple paths in front of us here. America, I'm speaking about, our nation, right? All of a sudden, everything has been yanked out from under us. That old new normal back then is no longer. Problem is, you've got to adjust to whatever this normal is going to be, and there are many that don't like it. So I think what I'm trying to say is, how do we find that happy medium? The happy medium is, I think, what I need to say we might be looking for. So it's not the extreme out there, whatever that might be. And the old is back that way. We can't go backwards, people. You can't go to the past. That Back to the Future movie was all, you know, that's a gag. Can't do it. Got to worry about today and tomorrow, right? And more so, you got to worry about today. Too many people put their head in tomorrow and yesterday. And it really is living in the moment, I think, that gets us there. I think it's important to say that, especially as we're going through this wild roller coaster ride of a pandemic and a civil unrest and a country that's being torn from limb to limb, some would say, right? Well, I suggest today to you that we forgot really how good we had it. I think we did take a little bit for granted, potentially, people. I mean, you think back to last November, not too long ago, November, December. I mean, think about it right then at that moment. And boy, I tell you, did we take a few things for granted or what? How many would like to get back to last November? Raise your hands. Exactly. Kind of hard to do, isn't it? But it was something special about last November versus where we find ourselves today. Of course, soon enough, we'll be in the new November, right? What does this new November hold for us? We'll see. It'll be interesting. I was thinking the other day how our kids will look back at this moment in time, you know, the history that's happening right now. And I think about it in the terms back in 1918, when that flu pandemic went on. And by the way, that pandemic back then, if you look historically, was over a couple of years, about two and a half, roughly half years. It was not a here, there, and gone immediately. Same thing you're going to have now. This is at least a two-year event, people. Don't throw anything at me now. I'm just giving you the gospel truth. These pandemics are not casual. They don't come and go real fast. They hang around a bit. There's multiple levels as you've got to get that herd immunity and we got to get over it, right? But back in 1918, 1919 into 1920, it was about mid-1920 before this thing was gone. You know, those people had no idea at that moment that they were creating history as well. They just knew that they had a major impact and a pandemic that was tearing up the world. It infected, you know, 500 million people, about a third of the world's population back then. And there was about four successive, one after the other, waves of that virus that happened back then. And I wonder back then what they thought about the American dream, in fact. What was the American dream? Because the American dream has evolved over the years. This whole experiment of America has changed quite a bit, actually. Problem is, a lot of us want to hold on to that beautiful American dream. We want to guard it and cherish it with our lives. We want to protect it. We want to make sure it's here for our kids and our grandkids. And I think most of us are unselfish that way, I hope and pray. I know I am. I think you are too, right? We want to protect that for future generations. I mean, we want that to be the way. We want our great, great, great grandkids, even though we're not here, we want them to perfect in this American dream, right? Don't we? And we got to want that, people. That means we got to get it right. Let me tell you this. Here's a pretty good, interesting descriptive of it. At Investopedia there, Adam Barone, he describes it this way. The American dream is the belief that anyone, regardless of where they were born or what class they were born into, can attain their own version of success in a society where upward mobility is possible for everyone. The American dream is achieved through sacrifice, risk-taking, and hard work rather than by chance. I like that American dream. That seems real to me, people. Yet sometimes in our lives, the surroundings may not be perfect, you see? And I was taught as a young boy that timing is everything. Timing means absolutely everything. The timing, your timing has to meet opportunity. And by chance, if that all hits, well, that's like magic. That's like becoming a star NBA player or just a brilliant musician or a fabulous author or a world-class orchestra player. That's what that is, man. And somebody discovers you. Hell, I'm still waiting for somebody to discover me to think this guy's got it all together, man. And that's timing is everything. We all want to be discovered, don't we? We want to resonate in the moment. Well, that term was coined by writer and historian James Truslow Adams in his best-selling 1931 book entitled Epic of America. He described it as that dream of a land in which life should be better and richer and fuller for everyone. And I like everyone. I want to put the emphasis on everyone. Like, let's say everyone. Like, let's that just resonate. Everyone. I want that to resonate in the room with you a little bit so you won't forget that, right? With opportunity for each according to ability or achievement. The idea of the American dream, people, its tenets can be found in the Declaration of Independence. And I quote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among them are," what are they? "Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." We're going to talk about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that American dream, the new normal, and how great it is to be alive and here in America. We'll be back with more Voice of a Nation with our special guest in just a moment.
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Listen to Malcolm, the Voice of a Nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
You know, being a patriot, I love America. I love the American dream. And I always, you know, as a young boy, that we had just tremendous opportunities, the ability to do great things, to climb high mountains, to achieve amazing things. And, you know, I wanted to be a professional ball player when I was a young boy. I used to play in the ball lots. So you hear me talk about that a lot. And I guess that was a dream as a young boy I would have loved to have. But then I met a girl and, well, that changed everything. But that's another story for another day. Let's bring on here Dr. Julie Albright, author, professor. She is a digital sociologist at University of Southern California. She had a great book out there. We'll talk about a little bit later, Left to Their Own Devices, How Digital Natives Are Reshaping the American Dream. When I say up front there, the American dream is achieved through sacrifice, risk-taking, and hard work rather than by chance. In your opinion, is that the American dream, or do you have a different version of it?
Well, first of all, thanks so much for having me. This is a great topic. I love what you just said. I actually did a TED Talk about the pursuit of happiness and about these themes of the American dream. So I've been thinking a lot about it. Achievement takes hard work. It takes perseverance, persistence. I always talk to my students about that. You know, success takes a lot longer than you think it's going to take. But what I have been exploring in recent years and in my book is that young people, particularly digital natives, those that grew up in a world where there always was an internet, are coming unhooked, or what I call coming untethered, from the traditional American dream that you've described. For example, you think about, if you asked a lot of people, what is the American dream? I think traditionally you would get that you know, white picket fence house, you know, married, 2.5 kids in the car and the dog, you know, sort of thing. But young digital natives, particularly millennials, are unhooking from those sort of life goals or milestones, if you will. They're not getting married anywhere near the rates of their, you know, parents or grandparents' generations. They're not buying homes. They're not having kids in a marriage. They're not going to church or joining political parties or all these sorts of traditional behaviors that would have been routine, let's say around post-World War II, which sociologists consider the golden age of the family. And at the same time, they're hyper-attached to digital technologies. And this is really changing everything, this constellation of behaviors called coming untethered.
Yeah, it has changed everything, which is why I was so excited to have you on as well to talk about the digital piece of this, which you study so well and can speak about. Let me ask you about that white picket fence a minute, the married, the kids, the dog, the whole bit here. Was that your American dream by chance?
Well, it's what I think we grew up with. And I've taught courses for many years on things like sociology of the family, for example. And I actually have also a master's and a PhD, by the way, in marriage and family therapy. So this idea of talking about families and what that looks like, you know, I've had a lot of conversations over the years with my students, you know, what is the American dream? And, you know, they'll raise their hand and sort of describe that traditional, almost a meme, if you will, of that, you know, white picket fence life. But I think that, you know, with the rise of the internet and the rise of social media and Instagram, it presents so many life possibilities. Like, you know, you're on a beach in the Bahamas, you know, living your best life, being fabulous, or in Bali, working poolside, or backpacking through Europe and showing all these fabulous lives. So I think that's really presented a wider array of possible lives for young people to choose from. Whereas if you go back to, say, the 50s or before social media and the internet, you don't have as broad a range of possibilities of who and what you can be in life.
Let me ask you this, please, from my own standpoint, because you're so informed and as a psychologist, you can give me some perspective. So I never wanted the white picket fence, didn't want the whole married thing and the kids either, truth be told. Wanted to be more of a rock star out there doing things, shaping the world, kicking ass, taking names the whole bit. Why is that?
Well, I guess you're a renegade. well, and I think you're touching on something important, Mr. Renegade, and that is that, you know, there probably always were those, God, I'd love to be a rock star, but this is what you did idea. And so I think that's one thing that millennials have been sort of breaking out of, the this is what you do, as a, and really expanding that notion of what you can be. I mean, if you look at women's history, I remember my mother used to say, well, you're a teacher or a nurse or a housewife, and that's what you did. And you had children. That's what you did.
I hate it when people say that, that's what you did, you know, or
that's what you did.
I know.
But it was a compromise of sorts of your own dream. So I guess you could think of sort of the standard off-the-shelf American dream. And what's changed now, I think, Malcolm, is that the American dream is now customizable, just like everything else. You know, just like your news feed is customizable. What you choose to look at on Instagram or other social media, Facebook, is customizable. Now the American dream is also customizable to people's whims, again, with many more choices than earlier days.
I like that, customizable. That is a cool way to say it, Julie. And, you know, my mom would have been that woman, and that it's a generational thing, really. You're right in ways, because my mom would have been that one to say, Malcolm, you're supposed to do it that way. Now stop it. You know, she would have been the one to say, you know what I mean? Yeah. Never letting me get away with any big, you know, what do you mean you want to be a rock star? Knock it off and go get that white picket fence. Will you knock it? I mean, really, though, huh?
Oh, yeah. That's completely true.
I mean, she's not here now to see this. I know she would chuckle at the moment. She even does. Oh, yeah.
You know. She's shaking her finger at you from
From heaven. Absolutely. And I remember that as a young lad, even growing up with her. It's just so funny. She think back to, you know, again, the American dream as young people, because we are shaped as young people You know, that's the whole thing some people lose sight of. I mean, we're really shaped when we're 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, certainly by 10, 12, 15, it's done, it's over. We are who we are. People that all of a sudden get to 25 and all of a sudden, well, you know what, I'm going to do this. Or, I mean, you are who you are at that point. And I think a lot of that is, and I say this only so everybody understands that, you know, children deserve to have the proper upbringing. They deserve to have the right opportunity for their American dream, not to be caught into your problems or your challenges or your adult issues. I think it's important to say, Julie, don't you?
I do. And you also reminded me of something else when you said this, and that is, if we go back to that golden age of the family, which is post-World War II, people grew up in neighborhoods, and you think about marrying the girl next door. Remember that idea? You know, people would meet and marry the girl next door because people were confined to these neighborhoods and confined to a certain set of value systems, belief systems. It's like birds of a feather flocking together, right, in your neighborhood. Well, now with the internet, this is really interesting. Millennials are the most likely group to say they consider themselves citizens of the world. So because they've been exposed to, you know, CNN and the 24-hour news cycle, watching things live around the world, the internet, and all these possible lives, their mindset, I think, is broader in terms of what's possible because they're not confined simply to their neighborhood. In the digital world, it's much broader than that. And I think that shapes or reshapes then who they are and who they think they can be.
Julie, the two big points I want to make sure we get through in the next hour, one of them, before we get to some of the casualties of the pandemic and some of the points I expressed up front in my monologue there, I would like to talk to you a moment to get your insight, please, on the civil unrest, the rioting, the rule of law that's being questioned with from sea to shining sea, really. It is happening everywhere from that spark that happened in Minneapolis. Talk about the impact of this American dream, please. Staying on our path now. I want to stay on our path of the American dream. What is the American dream for this group? I know we can't, it's very difficult to generalize. I mean, I'll give you that definition first. I mean, I get that. But generally speaking, as we see this unrest happening and the riots and the disturbances and the breakdown of a civilized society, really, what do you take from that within our American dream talk here?
Well, what I take from it is that we have significant demographic shifts underway. As millennials and those generations follow them come up and become young adults and adults, they are significantly more diverse in terms of race and ethnicity than their predecessors. So we're undergoing a shift of demographics in this country right now. And I think that shift, coupled with changing values, again, this coming untethered mindset that's happening, coupled with the ability that you can quickly spin up a social movement online through social media, mm-hmm. through Twitter, et cetera, is really creating this perfect storm. Coupled with COVID, which has got millions of people out of work with sort of nothing to do, and the sort of anger that's bubbling up. You know, it's all sort of combining together into this perfect storm moment. But I think, as you said, what is the new dream? Changing values, making a difference in the world, equity and diversity and these kinds of things, social justice, the idea that you can sort of customize your own identity in a sense, you know, that there are more categories available for gender and who you can be and how you can identify. So these may seem like foreign concepts and new ideas for older Americans, but you know, for younger Americans that are living in a digital world, they're sort of second nature at this point.
Yeah, so this perfect storm that you're talking about right now, I mean, I think everybody understands that. I mean, because everybody seems to be going through a storm right now, Julie. I mean, and I mean, most people I can hear saying to me, and most listeners would say, and it certainly isn't perfect, Malcolm, in our lives, but it is a perfect calamity of events that have happened and come together to disrupt our normal lives, the normalcy we used to know back in November, Julie. That's gone now. That normalcy is gone. And so now, and as we move this conversation along, I do want to talk about this new normal a little bit later in the program, but staying on this, a perfect storm and the civil unrest I questioned you about, let me ask you this, where America is being exposed, the way it's described to me often is, it's like a scab has been pulled off or a Band-Aid quickly ripped off somebody's bruised knee. And it's like, you know, you rip it right off there and up, oh, there it is, it's exposed. We see it there now. And then you get all your political operatives running around it because you know full well, Julie, that political people on the left and the right, they love opportunities because it creates power for them, and power and greed and avarice. I mean, that's all talk about a perfect storm. So you really have all your vultures in the game right now trying to tear this thing apart. In the meantime, mom and dad are home. You know, the scab is exposed. You know, we just come through a lockdown. The possibilities. Now we got the cities are coming apart at the edges. What we'd like to call normal American events or moments now seem to be taken over or becoming more hostile with the vandalism and disturbing and shootings and killings and breaking things down. And it's gotten a little more serious, hasn't it?
Yes. When you take a look, I think that you're right to mention peaceful protests. There seems to me, I've been in the epicenter of what's going on in downtown Los Angeles, so I sort of saw things with my own eyes. And down there, they've had explosions going off every night since May. Now, you know, fireworks of that magnitude that can shake a high rise are expensive. And it's hard to imagine that an unemployed kid would be blowing off explosions every single night until 2-3 in the morning since May. And this is now August. It's still going on. Mm. So what it seems to me, and I saw that during the initial disturbances with huge fireworks, and it seems to me that there are other forces at work, other groups at work, or individuals, who knows how organized they are, that have used this movement of social justice as cover to create some kind of chaos and to create, forward some kind of agenda of their own, be it, you know, coming apart at the seams, kind of anarchy. It seems like something like that is going on. But I definitely saw different aspects happening at the same time as the marches were going on, et cetera. And I think that those are distinctly different groups.
And you're concerned.
Well, sure. I mean, I love Los Angeles. I wrote a lot of my book in New York. It's kind of it's got a lot about New York City in it. And I've spent a lot of time there. So, it's heartbreaking to me to see what's happening in the cities. I've been on a big tour. I've been in all the cities. And I find it very heartbreaking. But I'm hoping that we can come out of this, stronger, more aware, and also that we can sort of root out those that are just purely have destructive impulses going on.
Mm, that is so well said, what you say there. Just pause a moment to hear what Dr. Julie Albright says right there, please, because that's important. Will we see all that coming out of it? And, you know, when we get to the other side, what does that look like? Well, she just describes, well, I'm hopeful, Malcolm, I'm hopeful that there is another side that is going to look brighter for all. So that's something we need to work toward, people. That is important. There should always be hope and opportunity, for sure. We'll get into more of that. Let me bring on here now Dennis Santiago. Dennis is an American strategist. He focuses on strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability. He's a writer and a great thinker here at America Out Loud. And Dennis, we talk here about the civil unrest. Most of this stuff is being hidden, or it's in the guise of peaceful protest. But as she's just suggested, the sort of apparatus and tools they're using to create the unrest suggests these are not a couple of young college kids or pranks in the neighborhood. And clearly, I think America is on to this, that this is being manipulated by outside forces, potentially. And they're really tainting our American dream. I mean, and it's given us a lot of food for thought. The question is, can we come back stronger, better? And we'll get into that. But how? What is your sense of that civil unrest, the rioting, the criminal intent that has taken over our, I mean, I'm so concerned, I know as Julie is and as listeners are, with our great American cities. You've wrote about it multiple times on the platform, our amazing American cities. What gives with the criminal intent here?
Well, the criminal intent at this point really centers around people that have agendas that have nothing to do with the peaceful side of this. And these agendas have been around for a very long time. The themes include communism, which is a theory that comes from the Industrial Revolution. It includes anarchy, which is a theory that comes from, it appears about every 100 years in the first or second decade of a century in America. And, you know, we're seeing it again. And there's a little bit of Woodstock to it, in that that free hippie movement of the 1960s that basically wants to stick it to the man just because comes out every once in a while. And you see that coming out in all of this.
Perfect what you say there, because see, what you just said, sticking it to the man, the common man. See, to me, that taints the American dream. That is in direct opposition to what the American dream is. And the one thing I think we've lost in this country that I continue to tell people, and we'll get Julie's opinion on this in a moment too, but is the sense that, Dennis, diversity of opinions and the diversity of thought and the diversity of success seems to be lost and gone on a lot of people, which is very disturbing to me, because it's a beautiful American trait that we had this, and now it seems to me like it's gone overnight. But you just said it with that criminal intent. They're sticking it to the common man in a way like they want something back, and they're using things ugly, like evil racism, and with that scab exposed to say how bad America is. And that's not an American dream any of us want. So I think we have a problem here.
Oh, we have a very big problem. And on top of that, Malcolm, the thing is, there's a weapon for taking advantage of that problem. And that weapon is technology, because technology is a dangerous thing. I'm more of a technologist than anything else, I think. And one of the things that I've noticed is that even as much as the internet was envisioned to be a blossoming of individuality, if you look lately, individuality has kind of been canceled on the internet, and it's been replaced by powerful groupthink. Social media has created peer pressure, particularly on young people who really, because they've been disconnected from traditional values and were exposed to several years of thinking that you could be anything you want, have very little right now in the way of a connection to the core moral compass that was or is the American vision of people who are older. So you've got this society that's just kind of groping around right now and really doesn't know exactly where it's going. And that's a society that's very, very susceptible to manipulation by even the most shallow of forces, which is what we are seeing. I mean, you know, you look at when these people that have these alternate agendas for the country come to power, even temporarily, they can't sustain it. And everything goes wrong almost immediately because they're not very well thought through ideas. However, right now, because of the power of the digital age and its ability to influence people, people buy into it and trust too much. I think we trusted the same way and made the same mistake with COVID, in that at the very beginning of it, we put our trust in public officials who, over time, it has turned out that, you know, they turns out they were doing a lot of guessing in the dark too. And that, I think, is also an aspect of where we are as a society right now. We've lost touch with our common sense and moral compass.
Well, we definitely have done that. We have, I mean, I think everybody probably listening can agree to completely to what Dennis says there. We have lost touch with our values and our moral compass, and we've lost touch with a lot of things. We also took a lot for granted, as I said up front to the monologue people, with the American dream. I think we took a lot for granted. And, you know, but again, on the bright side, and let's always remember there is a bright side, please, okay? It is an opportunity when you break things down to rebuild them in a really even a higher glory and all of that wisdom. I mean, think about everything we've learned coming through the moment. If we can take all this and get to the other side of this hurdle effectively, you see, think about, wow, I mean, it's endless what we can do. Haven't learned what we have learned, but we need to be honorable. We need to be clean about what we're doing. We need to be truthful, be straightforward with ourselves, though, and what kind of a country we want, what kind of a nation, what our American dream is. We need to get back to accepting that diversity of opinion is a beautiful thing. Our cities are crying for help right now. They are crying for help. And again, there is no great America without great American cities in our towns and communities. It is what makes up our great nation. It's important to remind ourselves of that, for sure. You know, yeah, we should never lose sight of what's important, people. I mean, there are just certain things that are non-negotiable, you see? They're not negotiable. Absolutely not. So when we talk about the American dream, I think a lot of people are asking, you know, with this whole pandemic and COVID thing, is that killing the American dream? A lot of people have just come through a pandemic and a lockdown, still going through it. And different areas of the country, different states, different rules of engagement. But people are struggling and suffering, and it's impacted their livelihoods. And then they're relying on, you know, government handouts and things that just to pay the bills, sadly. But that's what's happened. And now you've got all these forces at play, and you've got to begin to step back and say, okay, how do we make this thing happen? We'll take a pause here a moment and be back again with Dr. Julie Albright and Dennis Satir, who continue the conversation on the American dream and the new normal. Yes, our new normal. Yes, the best new normal we can ever make it, just on the other side of the hurdle. And this pause as well. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. As we celebrate our four-year anniversary, thank you for making it all possible. Well, shouldn't news deliver truth and inspire us to reach higher? With blogs, podcasts, video, and 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
The silent majority has spoken. We say, let the silent voices be heard. You can be the voice of change. Contact our producer at liberty@americaoutloud.com. liberty@americaoutloud.com.
We've just come through an unprecedented moment in time of just great pressure, the stress, the family unit, of the decimation of the business community. The rules of engagement changed overnight, basically. And it started with this, Julie. It started with, we're going to, you know, shut things down for 2 weeks. Can you handle it, America? Now, we had to look at ourselves at that point. I know I did. And say, you've got to be kidding me, right? Like, is this for real? You want to lock everything down for 2 weeks? And then, you know, Julie, I really didn't even know what the hell that meant, as most people. Then when I was walking in the neighborhood and seeing the local dog park locked up and signs on the park and the local basketball courts or the city things or what have you that are also locked up, I then realized, well, I guess they really meant they were locking shit up. I mean, this is like a real bad lockdown here, man. It's a bad case of the chicken pox. The whole world's got it. Like, this was, so what did that do to our brains? How does that impact our American dream? Talk to me, Julie.
Well, there's a lot packed in there. I'm going to try to unpack that a little bit. And what I would say is what it's doing is it's changing our perceptions and it's changing our behaviors in significant ways. One thing that we've seen is a huge trend, particularly amongst young people in recent years, and this is a global trend, is what's called urbanization, a move toward the cities. Young people like to be in the cities. You can Uber around and have food delivery come to you and all these sorts of benefits of living in a dense environment. But with COVID, we've discovered that density is not your friend. So I would say two trends that started, one started before and one was driven by COVID and by the social unrest we talked about. One of those that you're going to see here now is a flight from the cities. You're going to see a reversal of urbanization as people flow out of the cities and move towards suburban or more rural or even international environments, seeking security, seeking peace, and seeking health. A lot of people realize, like, locked into a small room, paying high rent without any amenities in these cities doesn't make any sense. They would like to be out in the, let's say, a gal was talking about being in the Hudson Valley, for example, as opposed to New York City, where she could go outside and walk around. So that's the first thing. The second thing is an amplification of what I called working untethered, this idea that young people feel not only they have the ability, but they have the right to work remotely. Well, that was kind of a hipster digital native thing that started out when I started looking into it for my book. But now work from home has touched everybody. And so that is going to be a trend that is going to span generations to older folks, for example. And it's also going to exceed the timing of our lockdown period for COVID. So this is going to be something that's work from home or hybrid work in, work out is going to be part of our work zeitgeist for some time to come.
That's going to be part of the new normal. That's right. The workforce change.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
You know, Julie, I seen something just the other day here in some images, Julie, in New York City at dusk, just as the evening was approaching. And they were pointing out, this might have been in the New York Times or something, I'm not positive exactly, but it was one of those big publications, could be Wall Street Journal. And they were pointing out that a lot of the cities, a lot of the townhouses, a lot of the condos, a lot of the buildings, many of them, in fact, there were no lights on anymore. The lights were very few. They were very far and in between. And they pointed out that, oh my golly, people have left. They're in the dark. They have left or probably left overnight just to get out of there. Some temporary, but a lot of people probably permanently have left the city. Plays to what you just said. This does not speak well for our cities now. So what does that mean? You know, you remember seeing those future movies back then when we would watch them, Julie, and you'd seen those, you know, what I'm talking about, those future cities where they're sort of hollow emptiness, the criminal intent was real high, the quality of life was really bad. And is that the future of our cities?
Well, I will say there's a third trend that ties into that dystopic picture that you just painted, and you could see it in different ways. But what we've learned now is that bodies become risky for businesses. So one of the predictions I've made that's starting to play out is that we're going to see a rise in sort of touchless or sort of automation, moving up the food chain. And we've already sort of automated away jobs in the manufacturing sector. Robots came in and build cars, for example. But you're going to start seeing things like the HR gal at work or the benefits person or other sorts of support staff being automated away by AI and machine learning, sort of digital assistants, if you will. And you're going to see a big rise in that as bodies become risky coming into offices, working together. So I think that's another shift that's going to happen as a result of our COVID moment.
That's a great point to bring up, Julie. That's a fantastic point because I've been talking about the AI revolution that is going to happen. And you know what's interesting about the AI? Most people, majority of people, probably a lot of you out there listening, have not paid any attention to this and have no idea what is being said right now. I mean, you hear it and you're saying, okay, yeah, no, I get it. but I don't think any of us really get it. We're talking about a transformation in our civilized environments that we haven't seen before. This is like going from the Stone Age, Julie, to where we were driving automobiles. This next move is going to be sort of like that, don't you think?
Yes, I do think. And, you know, as bodies become risk vectors for, you know, businesses are going to look for ways to reduce risk and to increase productivity. You know, bodies get sick, right? Bodies have to care for other bodies. But the automated employee shows up 24/7, never takes a day off, never goes on strike. So, you know, companies that are creating these digital employees are seeing huge upticks now.
Upticks, that's interest. Right. That's right. It's all about the balance sheet at the end of the day. And Julie brings up a great point. And you know what? They also don't spill the coffee on the computer normally, and they don't need a holiday pay either. This, well, the way Julie just perfectly captured my thoughts and said, well, Malcolm, the dystopian view you just gave, there was a knock in the head a moment to say, I mean, come on. I mean, could you do better than going back to one of those wicked horror movies we seen back 20 years ago? But really, Dennis, that's kind of what my thinking is. Our cities are in trouble. And so what's the future of them?
Well, the future of them is they are going to become more hollow shells. So I think we're going to see a lot more downtown Detroits in the future.
Wow.
In the aftermath of that, I mean, we're already starting to see the worries in the banking industry that the commercial real estate sector could crater. And, you know, these are business deals. So people could walk away from them and abandon them and leave the banks hanging on to the property. Eventually they get bulldozed over or actually demolished. And then you rebuild. And that'll take some time. Longer time, unfortunately, than I think we have to adapt to the fact that in the meantime, we're going to have a lot of people very unhappy because they are unable to feed themselves. And that basically means we have some choices to make in terms of how do we keep the American people alive when there are not really a lot of options for the American workforce. I feel a little bit sometimes like William Shakespeare writing sonnets telling people not to give up. And I particularly so with my friends that are entrepreneurs, in that 6 months in, I mean, talk about having your world yanked out from under you. These are the guys that created companies that took risks, and all of that stuff has fallen by the wayside 6 months into it. The number of telephone calls I get from people that go, I'm just going to give up. I've cashed my stuff in. I've closed my company. I've got enough money to last 3 to 5 years. And I'm really just not going to do anything. And would you like to talk about survivalism with me and stuff like that? And these are the people that created small businesses. So we're looking at a period where there will be not enough of these kinds of people contributing to the economy, which would be traditionally where you would find, you know, people-based jobs still happening. So we're losing that as well, all because of COVID. And so these adaptations to the economy strike in many different aspects. And the one thing I do not see happening in this country is people looking at all of these things simultaneously and putting together some sort of net assessment of
how master plan.
All this stuff fits. Yeah, because you know what? Every single one of these cogs in the wheel that breaks, it destroys the entire machine. You break enough of them, you got nothing.
Yeah. Two thoughts to what you say there. The master plan is that's a good thing for everybody to hear what we're saying here. And here's the problem, people, is that, you know, the people you're electing to office, they don't look long term. Our leaders never look 100 years ahead. They don't look 50 years ahead, not even 10. They look in the 2 to 4 year cycle of an election. That's really puts us at a deficit thinking compared to Asia, compared to the Middle East, compared to a lot of countries around the globe. And I think it's important to point that out. So when Dennis says, well, we really do need a master plan, it's going to be hard to get that master plan unless we put it together. We meaning you and I out there. I mean, I'm willing to help put a master plan together, and one of the think tanks I'm going to be putting together, absolutely. But I think that's important to talk about our master plan. And I'm all in for that, to figure out what we want to be when we grow up, right? But we do need a master plan. The other point that I take away from what you say there is I think nobody is talking about this. I mean, we know there's a lot of debt being built up and a lot of things that are happening to try to bail out this COVID business and the rest of the demise that's happened here with the economic problems that are people are struggling through, sadly. But I think what's going to happen is there are a lot of people who are going to walk away from their dream. A lot of banks, a lot of others are going to walk away. And what's going to happen is the banks are going to be left holding the tab. You're going to have, I think, a bank crisis ahead. You're going to have a financial crisis because there's going to be a lot of property and a lot of assets that are left to the bank to deal with, to sweep up. You're probably going to have a high rate of bankruptcies. It's already happening. The business community is already closing. Your malls are going away. Your big restaurant chains are closing down. Other things are happening. So that all becomes sort of a new normal. Now, granted, I think both Julie and Dennis will agree with me when I say that with that new normal becomes new opportunity. Make no mistake about it. When you break something down, the phoenix will rise, you see. So just know that to be true. And it does create unprecedented opportunity. But there is a price to pay through to get through all of that. And that's what's happening here with this unprecedented knock 'em sock 'em down crisis we're dealing with here on multiple levels, you know, really. Julie, I got to ask you this question. It's an important one, and I need an answer from you because I think you're the person that might be able to help me out with it. It's a big question, but it's this. Why do you think socialism, which is really communism, has become so attractive to a viable option to Generation Z?
Well, I think it's the idea of equity, you know, that everyone can sort of take part. I think a lot of young people, as I said, as diversity is a integral part of their life experience, and they see a lot of people being left out or left behind from the American dream. You know, they want to be a part of it. And, you know, that kind of makes sense. I like what you're saying about, you know, looking long term. I think two things. One, looking long term and thinking, secondly, what you and Dennis were talking about, thinking about the complexity of the situation, taking a systems view to seek solutions here. You know, and we may need to revisit things like the Work Progress Administration. You know, maybe this isn't socialism, but in a sense, it's a way to bridge a crisis moment and, you know, create infrastructure, which is a longer term view, and as well as, you know, bring the arts back and things like that. So we need some short term thinking for the crisis and then some longer term rebuilding thinking that thinks about complexity.
Well, arts, sports, they're trying to bring sports back, but it keeps tripping up for different reasons of COVID and what have you. The arts, again, they don't want people together. So everything has got to be sort of remote, which is the whole problem with this American dream. You're kind of on your own, people feel that there's not that group feel anymore. You've lost the relationship factor that plays into it. A lot of this is explained in the op-ed that Dennis has on AmericaOutloud.com. The one that's called Stop the Coronavirus from Killing the American Dream. Okay, so he gets into more of that in that piece. There were a lot of other interesting things that people read that and felt you were being too pessimistic, Dennis. They said, we must never give in. Another person, James, says, Cynthia says, we must fight and never give up. And there were many comments that said that, that we must not let go. We must continue to fight. There were some people that think we're a little late to the game here. Dennis, let me ask you straight out the final question here. Are you pessimistic or optimistic for the future of the American dream?
Oh, I'm very optimistic. The point of why I wrote that article was basically to get people to start to think about the magnitude of the problem that we need to work on. It's fine and dandy to say, I'm lucky I got my peace, my corner of the world is secure, and I can go about with my happy little life. The problem is we have to bring 330 million people in a $16 trillion GDP economy through this intact, or we'll lose it.
Well, but hold on now. If you really think about what you're saying, if you really analyze what you just said, that would almost be a definition of socialism.
Problem here is that people at this point in time have forgotten that America is a social compact. It's not socialism. It's just being a good American to care about your country. And when you stop and when you become tribal, which is what some of this stuff is, you know, I have a very big problem with tribalism, whatever sector it comes from. Mm-hmm. When you become that, then you lose your nation. And that is something that we cannot do. Now, that does not mean that you turn to the federal government and ask it to pay for everything, because that doesn't work either. We don't want to become Venezuela, because that is the end game in that one. Mm-hmm. So we have to find something better to do. And unless we're all willing to pull our own weight to make it happen, we're going to lose.
Well, we need that master plan you just talked about a little bit ago here. Julie, let me get you to answer the American dream. Are you optimistic or pessimistic about that dream?
Well, I generally tend to be optimistic. I've been running a salon called The Great Reset ever since COVID started to really rethink where we are and where we're going. And I guess I would just say you really nailed it with the idea of the new normal. And I would just encourage your listeners to think about what that means. It doesn't mean that we're going back to what was. It means we have to reshape, rethink, and really create a new reality for ourselves going forward.
The American dream and the new normal. A big thank you here to Dr. Julie Albright, Dennis Santiago. Let me tell you, Dr. Julie Albright's book, it will be in the America Out Loud bookstore, so we'll quickly connect you into Amazon to be able to purchase the book here. And so I want to just mention that to you. And the book is called Left to Their Own Devices, How Digital Natives Are Reshaping the American Dream. And be sure to check that out as well. Listen, I enjoyed the conversation. I hope you did as well out there. We have to be excited for our new normal, but it is up to us to make what that is. The American dream is a must. As I said to you early on, some things are not negotiable. Other things clearly are. We have to define what that new normal is going to be in our new American dream. That creates unprecedented opportunity. I would say to you, my fellow Americans, that throughout the next many years, once we get through this hurdle now, there will be a tremendous opportunity in this nation. And it will be plentiful, I believe, from sea to shining sea. And it is up to us, you and I out there, to make that happen. But we have that opportunity because we are part of this American dream. And patriotism is still alive and well, and the shiny city on a hill will live and shine as bright as ever. We must make sure of that, people. That's the goal right there. We can never let that go. Thank you again for being with me, being part of the mission here. Friends, it's time to get involved and get loud.